The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, is on the line. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, there are lots of things to talk about today. We can talk about vaccines and Denmark abandoning AstraZeneca, are recommending it only for the over 60s. Leo Varadkar telling me a few minutes ago he'd take AstraZeneca today if he was offered it. There's an awful lot of confusion and chaos here that I think is unnecessary.
It's a terrible shame, Pat. I was on AstraZeneca yesterday. I've got a very good contact in the company, you know, and they're all devastated as well because this is a very efficacious, safe vaccine. Let's just get that statement out there. Extremely rare events have happened, of course, which is not unusual with new vaccines and new medicines. And now look what's happened. It's just a terrible story, isn't it? I mean, AstraZeneca, they've kind of messed up from the start in some ways. My friend there, Pat, feels a little bit ashamed themselves. Have AstraZeneca performed themselves, because it's a funny one, isn't it? But the fact is, it is a great vaccine, and the question is, now can we bring it back in an effective way? Now, obviously, we're giving it to the over 60s, which is great. They should all take the vaccine, absolutely, because the data is so strong. I saw something yesterday, Pat. You're more likely to be struck by lightning than to be really badly harmed by this vaccine. That's how remote the odds are of being harmed by it, you know. So again, it's just a bit of a shame that this has happened.
Yeah, there are cynics out there who suggest maybe that Big Pharma, all of the rest of them, didn't like the idea that AstraZeneca was going to give the vaccine free to the developing world, and that there's been a campaign of misinformation and attack on AstraZeneca simply because of that stance. Do you think there's anything in that?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so. When the story's written, Pat, there'll be all kinds of things like that, I suppose, to make it interesting. You know, and then there was also vaccine nationalism, wasn't there? It was a UK-based vaccine. So this could be informing people's minds a little bit, I suppose, in the debate. I predict what will happen is that this will be the vaccine that will be deployed in the developing world a lot. I think you mentioned earlier that the EU will not renew the contract, apparently, at least in that next phase. The second thing I heard yesterday, Pat, was they're now making lots of variants with the AstraZeneca vaccine. They're going to try to maybe steal a march on the competition in a year's, you know, in 6 to 9 months' time to show that they've got a great way to make a vaccine that will work against any variant. And the second thing that we still don't know is the AstraZeneca vaccine may give a more durable response. We still don't know how they compare for long-term protection. That one may win, you know. So it's still very much it's amazing, Pat, how every day there's new information. It's still very much a work in progress, I guess.
Okay, and we had questions this morning about Pfizer and Moderna that we have no notion yet what its longevity is in terms of protection.
No.
Is it going to be like the flu vaccine, you need a shot every year with a slight variation, or does it give longer protection, which we simply don't know yet?
We don't. And it could well be one of them, and it could be AstraZeneca might give you 2-3 years protection, you know, from the vaccination. So that could win in that particular race. So that's something that we'll find out in the coming months.
Yeah. It must disturb you, though, as a scientist, when, you know, Johnson & Johnson have, again, very rare cases of clotting reported in the United States, 1 in 1 million or whatever. And the same sort of technology is used for Johnson & Johnson, but so too for Sputnik. And I don't know how many of the other 100 vaccine candidates out there are employing that technology.
Yeah, several are using this adenoviral technology. And it has been used before, but it was in the Ebola vaccine, for instance. But of course, the side effect didn't come up because they hadn't vaccinated millions of people. These side effects have only come up because it's been in, 100 million people. And then you begin to see these extremely rare events, you know. So the question is, will they not use it anymore? Will they change it? You never know. It will come down, Pat, to the marketing departments of these pharma companies, I bet you, in the end, to defend their product in the marketplace. That kind of thing. It may move in that direction.
A question from Julian. Are we missing a trick with the AstraZeneca vaccine? With other European countries ditching it, Ireland has the opportunity to grab all the doses it needs and follow the UK into starting to live again.
That's right. That's a really good point. But the other thing to say is that NIAC will be under pressure now to handle the J&J one differently, because if they don't, there'll be an inconsistency there, you know? Because obviously the J&J, Johnson & Johnson vaccine is the same kind of vaccine. Will NIAC now say only in the over 60s with that one? Because if they don't, there'll be an inconsistency in their messaging as well, you see? So they'll be under a bit of pressure there, I bet you. But once we hear more about Johnson & Johnson, when the EMA gives its report, I wonder what NIAC would recommend with that one.
Yeah. And we're told that the EMA will report within days. They've already given a sort of a green light to Johnson & Johnson. They don't indicate that they have many concerns, but they'll give a formal report shortly. But equally, yeah. They have no inhibitions about recommending AstraZeneca for any age group.
Yeah. Well, the EMA have approved both of these vaccines, remember, the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca vaccine. These adverse events have come up, which happens with any new product. They do see adverse events, especially when you have millions of people. The normal thing is that goes on the label on the product, and then it might give guidance to doctors if these side effects emerge, and you keep using it. That's a standard thing that happens, you know. And I no doubt that will continue to be the case with AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson.
Now, some of the other topics you want to address. The other day, someone said we were being alarmist in talking about long COVID. And I was saying, well, you just have to factor that in as one of the downsides of not getting vaccinated if you end up with long COVID. So what can you tell us about the numbers of people who end up with long COVID?
Yeah, there's huge analysis happening now because obviously this disease has afflicted so many people. We're getting a good picture of, you know, long symptoms. It's at least 10% will have some kind of long COVID. And it's not just things like fatigue or sleep disturbance. It's also breathing difficulties, you see, which means your lungs actually have been injured physically, you know. So you might have trouble breathing if you walk up the stairs, say, for example, a little bit of exertion. People get breathless. And they reckon it's about 10% overall. It will vary between age groups. It's more common in women than men, for instance. One of the slight differences here. But certainly it's at least 10% of people will have a significant symptom months after they've cleared the infection. And one very good part of the analysis that was if you've been in hospital, you've been 87% of people will have a long-term symptom post-discharge from hospitals. And these are relatively serious things, a bit like, you know, as I say, breathlessness and maybe even some heart problems, you know. So there's no doubt this virus does cause huge harm to our bodies in a certain number of people, of course, not everybody. And then there are more long-term symptoms. So again, it re-emphasizes that this is a serious disease.
Yeah, and those who suffered from SARS and MERS, they have their long sufferers as well, haven't they?
Yeah, precisely. Now, not many people had SARS and MERS, as you may know, from the history of this coronavirus sort of family of viruses. But still, there was a reasonable level of post-viral symptoms. And again, it was things like chronic fatigue, you know, breathing difficulties were a feature there. So what it looks like is if the more severe members of the coronavirus family, which means SARS, MERS and SARS-CoV-2, are inclined to provoke more long-term symptoms, and we call them long COVID. The second thing is that it's good news in a way that the vaccine is giving people relief from long COVID symptoms. So there's a way to treat it kind of now, you know. So anybody who's had COVID should take the vaccine, and if they have long COVID, those symptoms might begin to resolve more quickly after they've taken the vaccine.
Now, we remember there was a story going around earlier on in the pandemic that if you had blood group A, which as I happen to have A positive myself, that you might be more susceptible to COVID. But there's science now telling us what the real story is.
This is a good example of how science works. So very often you'll see something scientifically, say, in a certain number of people. And then you wonder, is that going to hold up more generally? And early on, there were hints that maybe the A group was giving people, as you say, a greater risk of severe disease. But now, of course, they've looked at an awful lot of people and there's no risk. So that idea, it was an idea initially, you know, which is now gone because a bigger analysis has shown that that blood group doesn't give you increased risk. And by the way, even when it was reported that there was no clear reason why that A blood group A would give you an increased risk, you know, that made people wonder, could it be true? If there was a mechanism as to why that group was giving you more problems, then you might have believed it more, if you know what I mean. But that's now gone away. There's no specific risk with any particular blood group.
Now, there's a very interesting thing going on generally in the pandemic, and that is how exactly can you contract this? And in Germany, a group of aerosol scientists wrote to Angela Merkel and said, hang on a second, you know, it really is caused by aerosols. That's the primary method of transmission. So, you know, people outdoors are safer. But if they're indoors in any circumstance, that's where they're going to get it. Now, we were looking before at canaries in the coal mine, and you mentioned them very early on. There was a choir, and there was also the cruise liner where you had, if you like, the petri dish for infection. So tell me about what is now known from those two canaries that perhaps many people missed.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is a really good example, again, of science and action in a way. So the Diamond Princess cruise liner, you may remember that it was February last year, that there was a big outbreak on that cruise ship. I mean, it's amazing to think it was over a year ago now. You know, there were 712 people were infected out of 2,500. That's called a very high attack rate, by the way. And the doctor on that ship said, look, this is spreading through aerosols. Even back then, he knew. You know, the reason for that was everybody was put in their cabins. And there was very careful kind of handling of them, you know, but still all those people got infected. So it couldn't be getting caught off surfaces, was he was saying, because all the people were in their cabins. You know, it must have been coming through the vents into the cabin, into each cabin, you know, and that gave rise to the infections. And at that time, Pat, half of all the cases outside China were on that cruise ship, as you may remember, because it was pretty early on. But it became very clear that this was being spread by aerosols even then, you know. And then, of course, that gets reported, but people don't quite believe it. So this can't be true. It must be off surfaces. It must be a major source of infection. And then, as you say, around the same time, about a month or so later, the choir, the famous Skagit Valley Choir in Washington State, 53 people were infected in one evening there. And again, that couldn't be explained by surfaces. That had to be spread by people singing and aerosols coming out, you know. Yeah. And so gradually the picture builds up that this is an aerosol-driven disease, you know. And what that meant was the guidelines had to be, don't worry about surfaces, but wear masks for definite, and also get outdoors and have good ventilation. That began to build then as the way to handle this, you know. So, but it's a good story because initially the CDC didn't believe this, you know. They said, oh, we need more evidence, give us more support for this notion that it's from an aerosol transmission route. And then, of course, over time, then eventually we all realized this is an aerosol disease, really.
Yeah, and there was a guy called Jose Luis Jimenez, an aerosol scientist at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Himself and nearly 40 of his colleagues were trying to get the WHO to acknowledge that the virus was being transmitted through aerosols, and they wouldn't believe him, and the CDC wouldn't believe him. So this is what he accused everyone of what is called gaslighting.
Yeah,
his findings. Yeah. What is gaslighting in that context?
Someone said to him, you're being gaslighted, and he looked it up. Now, what gaslighting is, but it's you manipulate someone, you know, by psychological means into doubting their own sanity. So you define gaslighting. So in other words, he began to think, oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my data is wrong. You know, he questioned his own scientific excellence, I suppose. And he began to worry that maybe he'd got it wrong, basically, you know. And eventually he realized, I haven't got it wrong. This evidence is, an aerosol-borne disease, you know, and he stuck to his guns. But it's a good example of how scientists can sometimes get a bit anxious, you know, especially if the CDC are telling him you're wrong, because they're a very eminent agency, you know. But again, I suppose the good part is over time, the evidence becomes absolutely compelling that this is an aerosol-driven disease. And he was vindicated, Jimenez, in the end, you know.
Yeah, because that Skagit Valley Choir case, they were very careful. They were pandemic aware. They washed their hands. They sanitized their hands. They distanced. There was no hugs and so on. And, you know, the theory was then, oh, well, they must have all handled a foldable chair or a few foldable chairs as they were spreading out, blah, blah, blah. Instead, it was their singing that was projecting the aerosols at each other. Anyway, at least it's now clear. It's now clear that it's primarily the mode of transmission is by aerosol. Now, I know that you're not a Muslim. Well, I think I know you're not a Muslim. I've never discussed it with you. But if you were and you wanted to go to Mecca, what sort of vaccine hoops do you have to jump through?
Yeah, well, we're in Ramadan at the moment, but of course in Ireland, the Muslims are celebrating Ramadan and Muslims will go to Mecca, you know, the Hajj once in a lifetime. That's a high-risk environment, remember, the Hajj, for obvious reasons. There's a thing called the Umrah. It's a shorter pilgrimage that many want to take as well. And now what the Saudi authorities have said is, you're welcome to come in the Umrah, but you must be vaccinated. So this is an example of the vaccine certificate, you know. Now, remember, lots of people go on the Umrah. We're talking millions sometimes, you know. So, and they're all in a massive group, aren't they? You know, there's an overcrowding happens and so on. So they've issued the decree, if you like. You're very welcome to come to Mecca, but you must be vaccinated. They've also said, actually, interestingly, that if you've evidence that you've been infected, that will do. So it's not just vaccines. If you've been naturally infected and you can prove it, they said you're welcome as well. So it's interesting, Pat, that these big events will restart, I suppose, not just, you know, pilgrimages, but also things like the FA Cup and so on. We're definitely moving towards vaccine certification now to allow people to attend big events, and the Umrah is a good example. And last year, the Hajj went ahead last year. Normally, Pat, 2.5 million people go to Mecca for the Hajj every year. 10,000 was the maximum last year. But now they're going to let people go if they can prove they've been vaccinated or if they've been infected.
Oh, okay. Well, it's risky anyway, I suppose, because particularly if you've been vaccinated, but maybe you're one of the people for whom the vaccine is not effective, or perhaps you're already infected with COVID when you get the vaccination and are spreading. Do we have any further update, finally, Luke, on the question of vaccine and transmission? I know the tests are ongoing. It appears from Israel that transmission has diminished considerably.
Well, Israel made a great statement yesterday, Pat. They said they're now exiting the pandemic. It's an official statement from them, which is a great thing to read, isn't it? Because the vaccination campaign has been tremendous, as we know, in Israel. Case numbers plummet. All the usual metrics are in a fantastic direction there. And they're now literally exiting the pandemic. What that means is we can all exit now if we get the vaccines out, remember. As ever, that's the key goal, is to get as many people vaccinated. And yeah, I mean, the evidence on transmission gets better all the time. I mean, AstraZeneca, that's at least a 60 to 70% decreased transmission, for example. Pfizer, 90% decreased transmission if you're vaccinated. These are tremendous numbers now for any vaccine. They've made, effectively, Pat, what's happened here in a sense is those companies have made the best vaccines ever, is the way to think of it, including AstraZeneca. So something we should be very proud of. So I think there's no doubt we follow Israel now. Wouldn't it be tremendous if we can say we're now exiting the pandemic? That'll be a great phrase. It will happen. It's just a question of in the coming months when we get the vaccine out.
Well, seize the day, grab as much AZ as we can and give it to as many people who are willing. Suzanne, finally, Luke says, all medicines carry risks. We should be able to sign a consent form saying we understand the risks and get on with our vaccine rollout. Crazy to stop using AstraZeneca. People are not stupid. This overly cautious and paternalistic approach of our medics is so frustrating.
100% agree, Pat. Now, what I would recommend as well is we're vaccinating the over 60s with AstraZeneca. Mm-hmm. They should give them one shot, right? Not the second shot. Give the second shot to people between 50 and 60 if they put their hand up and are prepared to take it, you know? And we should definitely now use up all the vaccine supply. We shouldn't be keeping the second shot back. That's a really important thing because we know remember, I'll give you the numbers. AstraZeneca is 76% efficacious after one shot. Pfizer is 80% efficacious after one shot. Johnson & Johnson is only 66% efficacious, and it's the one-shot vaccine. So there's no reason now not to give all the vaccine out as one shot, you know, and delay the gap then between the two shots. It's a very important message, I think.
Okay, well, the indications seem to be that those who've been vaccinated with their first shot and have an appointment for their second Pfizer in, 4 weeks later, that will probably proceed. But going forward, they are looking, I think, in the next week at making an announcement that will determine their strategy. Anyway, it's an ever-changing picture. And Luke, thank you very much once again for joining us with all the latest science on the coronavirus and on the vaccines.